We will open the hearing of the House Committee on Health and Human Services for February 9th, 2005, and want to welcome everybody to the meeting today. And we are going to deviate slightly from the order on the agenda. Representative Jensen has another committee at the same time, so we are going to move the work session up on the two bills that we're going to pass out today. And colleagues, these are bills that are basically language cleanups that were brought to us by legislative counsel. I think you recall the testimony. Pretty simple stuff. So I will open a work session on House Bill 2243. And may I have a motion?
Mr. Chair?
I move House Bill 2243 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Jensen moves House Bill 2243 with a due pass recommendation.
Just hang on. I'm just writing it.
Okay. Is there any objection to that motion?
No subsequent referrals on any of these, Mr. Chair.
Not that I am aware of.
Okay.
Without objection, we'll move it to the consent calendar. We will open a... Okay.
Well, so you pass to the floor. No objection. Without argument. Yeah. Then you take a motion.
Okay. Do I have a motion to place House Bill 2243 on the consent calendar? Representative Butler moves that we place House Bill 2243 on the consent calendar. Is there any objection? Seeing none, bill is placed on the consent calendar. And we will close the work session on 2243. We'll open a work session on House Bill 2244. Do I have a motion on House Bill 2244?
I move we pass House Bill 2244. Referral to the floor.
Okay. Representative Tomei moves that we refer House Bill 2244 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any objection on the motion?
Can I ask for a moment? Sandy, your note here says potential consequences of deaths with dignity were repealed. I don't expect to repeal, but the consequences are what?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that was just reference on what we discussed at our last meeting. Senator, there was questions on what would happen if the Death with Dignity Act were repealed as far as the impact of the statute. And Charlie Cheek mentioned that there, at this point, he didn't see anything, but that that was something that they couldn't really bring to the table at this point. Do you recall that conversation?
Roughly.
I can certainly change the...
I think if we have that note on the summary as it goes forward, it will make it appear that it's something less than a technical matter, and I think it's probably best that we don't raise, especially if we're putting it on the consent calendar. That would be good.
Sounds great.
Thank you.
Are you able to revise that?
Absolutely. This is still a preliminary SMS.
Great. Thank you, Representative Greenlee, for bringing that to our attention. Had a motion. There was a motion made. There were comments. Is there any objection to moving House Bill 2244 to the floor with a due pass recommendation? Seeing no objection, we move House Bill 2244 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Do I have a motion placed on the consent calendar?
So moved.
Representative Tormey moves that we place House Bill 2244 on the consent calendar. Is there any objection to that? Any
Chair,
comments? Yes.
One comment, and that is that I would go along with Representative Greenlee, the concern that there may be moved by the floor of any discussion relative to the Death with Dignity Act, and if staff, Sandy, can go ahead and make certain that the mentions of the issues discussed are a little more amplified in our discussion issues, then I think that would remove the members' concern of seeing this with on the consent calendar.
Okay. Representative Butler, did you want us to not place it on the consent calendar then?
Mr. Chair, my request is not to remove it from the consent calendar, but just a concern that the amplified language be ample there to indicate that the committee is not coming out in favor of any changes to the Death with Dignity issues, nor in opposition to this particular legislation, which further defines some of the issues, or further actually repeals obsolete provisions relative to irretractable pain, or intractable pain, I beg your pardon. That being the case, I think that if it's abundantly clear that it should be on the consent calendar, Mr. Chair.
Okay. we will make that happen before we send out the consent calendar. So
just not to set up any more red flags that I'm really missing.
You have a motion.
Yeah, we have a motion, right? Yeah, well, is there any objection to placing House Bill 2244 on the consent calendar?
No.
Seeing none, House Bill 2244 is placed on the consent calendar. Okay. Can I have a motion to suspend the rules to allow Representative Anderson to vote on House Bill 2243, which we already voted on?
So move.
We have a motion to suspend the rules for the committee to allow Representative Anderson to vote on House Bill 2243. Representative Anderson, how do you vote?
Aye.
Representative Anderson votes aye. Thank you for the motion. We'll close the work session on House Bill 2243. Thanks, Representative Anderson.
Thank you.
Cheers. All right. Thank you, colleagues. We can get Representative Jensen on his way, and we will return to the normal order of the agenda with a public hearing on the limited access dental hygienist permit to provide service in areas that are underserved. So we will open the public hearing on House Bill 2426, and we will invite Gary Allen and Steve, is it Duffy?
Representative Farr.
Representative Farr.
I'm sorry.
Of course.
Yes.
Come on forward. Okay. Welcome. Good morning.
Good morning. Chair Dalto and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Representative Debbie Farr, and I am here this morning to introduce Val Haynes, who is the Executive Director of Head Start.
I'm the health consultant.
The health consultant for Head Start. I stand corrected, from Lane County. And Val emailed me to tell me about the bill that is now before you. I was so excited by it that I asked Chair Dalto if I could sign on to the bill, and he very kindly agreed. So my job this morning is just to introduce you to Val and tell you that I am a strong supporter of this bill. I think in the tough economic times we're facing, this is something that we can do that is going to help children in Oregon, and it isn't going to cost the state anything. What a great way to serve children.
Okay.
Thank you, Representative Farr.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate...
Let's see. They're pretty sensitive.
Okay. I really appreciate that Representative Farr came down here. I have written testimony. I'm just going to read it. I'm a little nervous. And so bear with me.
If you have kids, we could go ahead and start fighting up here or something like that.
That would help. So I'm just going to go right on through. And please feel free to interrupt for questions. My name is Val Haynes, and I'm a registered nurse and currently the health consultant for Head Start of Lane County. In that role, I monitor the health status of over 800 children in our county, aged 3 to 5. I'm also the chairperson of Oregon Head Start Association's Oral Health Coalition, and I am a member of Oregon Department of Human Services Oral Health Advisory Board. What I forgot to mention is that I also serve on the Lane County Latino Medical Access Coalition and on the Dental Steering Committee for the Federally Qualified Health Center in Lane County. It was late when I wrote this. I am here before you because though I am a nurse, most of my time is spent focused on the oral health problems of children in Head Start, and because I'm sure that you all would be horrified by the cases of rampant decay that exist in Head Start programs in our state. 3 years ago, a few weeks into my new job, after switching from HIV work, I was awakened to conditions that I had never imagined could exist in the developed world. I was witnessing children with teeth so rotten that they were literally crumbling during mealtimes at Head Start. I honestly could not believe the extent of decay I saw in these children's mouths. I still can't believe it. Since our county did not have fluoridated water except in Florence, I knew that we should start with a technique of fluoride application called fluoride varnish, which had been used in Head Start programs in Florida in particular, that has been used successfully for over 30 years in Scandinavian countries.
I began in earnest to seek out support for bringing fluoride varnish into our Head Start program as soon as possible, as well as to any other venues that reach the infants and toddlers that would be entering our program. In this way, we could prevent the disease that was causing such pain and suffering. We could also be more efficient with the $28,000 that was being spent on the surgical treatment of only 10 children out of our 800. Because in addition to the surgical cases we could afford, we had huge numbers of children with unmet needs, since over 400 children had obvious visual decay noted during our screenings. We were unable to provide any preventive services, even though a focus on prevention would be our only hope of reducing disease. I immediately began reaching out to all aspects of our dental community and was informed of the existence of the LAP legislation that allowed a dental hygienist to provide preventive services within Head Start. Fortunately, I was able to find an interested LAP dental hygienist in my county, and we began working together to develop a program, even though I had minimal funds to spend. At the end of her first day in one of our classrooms, she was in obvious shock at what she was witnessing, despite 20 years of dental hygiene experience in private dental offices. After several days of work, she made it clear that this was something she would not be able to turn away from, even though getting funding through Medicaid would prove incredibly difficult, and most of her time in our program would be as a volunteer. As a dental professional, I know that her worldview had changed, and she's been working on this project ever since. The use of an LAP hygienist has now been woven into Lane County's federally qualified health center, and we've been awarded numerous grants for this innovative means of providing preventive dental services. I've seen the cases of rampant decay decrease over the last 2 years, and I now observe the ironic circumstance that our uninsured children that benefited from fluoride varnish as toddlers actually show less decay and reduced need of surgery compared to our Medicaid-covered children. Why the difference? Because the Medicaid-covered children don't get access to this prevention program until they enter Head Start at age 3, while the uninsured children get fluoride varnish applications as toddlers from our other partner, the nurse practitioner in the Healthy Tomorrow's Indigent Care Clinic. The Medicaid-covered children could easily have been receiving this effective beneficial intervention with funding provided by a local foundation that I had garnered, but WIC sites were not included in the LAP legislation. Being naive to the political process, I thought certainly this could easily be remedied by the Board of Dentistry, and I submitted a heartfelt letter stating that the State Oral Health Program, the Oregon Dental Association, Lane Dental Society, county and state WIC representatives, and the ODHA had all voiced strong support for the premise that children in WIC should have the same access to care as children in Head Start. The Board of Dentistry members apologized for the fact that this problem could not be remedied without going back to the legislature, and suggested that I request that those groups work together to remedy the problem in the 2005 legislative session. While waiting for the legislature to reconvene, I attended the dental hygienist workforce meetings, which the governor had called. And on December 2, 2004, the group met with the Board of Dentistry as facilitator at the governor's request. As you consider House Bill 2426, I hope that you all will refer to their final report and the recommendations related to LAP hygienists. Since the Board of Dentistry's mission is to assure that the citizens of the state receive the highest possible quality oral health care, there is a need for the Board of Dentistry to have explicit authority to determine what procedures are included in the scope of practice for LAP hygienists, just as they do for dentists, dental hygienists, and dental assistants. In this way, the board can make adjustments as needed when new technologies become available that can reduce dental disease in our state. I hope that you also consider the overwhelming cases of dental disease in our state among children and adults, and support legislation that will finally allow LAP hygienists to function in any setting in which their services are needed. During the 2.5 years of struggle to get the WIC exclusion fixed, I have seen firsthand the tremendous benefit one LAP hygienist can have in a community, mine, and we are prepared to use LAP hygienists on a larger scale in partnership with the managed care dental organizations that serve the Medicaid recipients in our county. House Bill 2426 will allow limited access permit dental hygienists to work in any setting in Oregon rather than a list of arbitrary locations that inevitably create barriers to access. This will enable programs like Head Start, WIC, community health centers, and any number of charitable institutions to utilize limited access permit dental hygienists to bring innovative, efficient, and cost-effective prevention interventions to low-income children and adults. Here are some access barriers that will be removed with House Bill 2426. Currently, an LAP hygienist may treat children in an early Head Start location, but are prohibited from treating that same child at a WIC clinic site. Currently, an LAP hygienist may provide dental hygiene services to an elderly adult in a care facility, but cannot provide the same services to an elderly housebound adult in their own home. Currently, an LAP hygienist can provide services to children in Head Start, but not to their parents or their siblings, even though those siblings and parents often have less dental coverage than the child in Head Start. As legislators, I'm sure that you're all concerned about the health and well-being of people of our state, and that as a result, you will support House Bill 2426 as a means of preventing the most prevalent disease in our state. Thank you very much for allowing me to talk with you today.
Thanks very much, Val. Are there any questions or comments from the panel?
Sure, I did have one comment or one question. Valerie or Ms. Haynes, is there any indication that that the work that is being done by this LAP dental hygienist in Lane County, is there any indication that had this had this bill been effective previously, that she wouldn't have found the same situation in your county when she went out the door to assist these young people that came to the clinic?
I'm not sure I understand. If this had been in place for the last 2 years?
The clarification would be, Ms. Haynes, that you in your testimony indicate that despite 20 years of dental hygiene and practice in a private office, after several days' work, she made it clear that something she would not be able to turn away from, even getting the funds from Medicaid, would prove incredibly mm-hmm. difficult. Most of her time in our program would be spent as a volunteer. Mm-hmm. Is there any indication that with the passage of this particular bill, that number one, she wouldn't spend the time as a volunteer, number two, that the dental hygiene in your community would be materially different as a result of this bill? In other words, what is this volunteer doing today that she couldn't do, couldn't have done before this bill was passed?
Well, she still can't work in a WIC setting as a limited access permit hygienist, and her time would be better spent, and a number of LAP hygienists' time would be better spent reaching the children in WIC when they're age 0 to 3 before the decay has progressed to the point that it does by age 3 to 5.
So I, Mr. Chair, I'm still anxious to find out what this bill does. What would this nurse that came to LAPD or LAPD, LAP dentalist, okay, LAPD age, what would this hygienist have been able to do differently tomorrow? What will she be able to do differently if this were law as opposed to what she is doing now?
What she could do differently, and not only her, but other LAP hygienists, because there's a number that I can't use in my community because they can't be used outside of Head Start and school settings, and they can only function on those students that are enrolled. And frankly, even the Head Start issue flares up from time to time because Head Start is not specifically written into that list. It's written in as daycare centers and nursery schools, and we'll from time to time have the board say, somebody on the board will go, well, is that really Head Start? And so it's been confusing since the first day I've been involved in this. WIC is not allowed currently. That is a huge problem because the most effective time to reach the children that we see with devastating rampant decay is between the ages of 1 and 2, really before the age of 2. It's ideal, especially if you're going to do fluoride varnish intervention, but also just for screening the concerns that you might see that a LAP hygienist is fully capable of looking for, more so than a nurse. So I could go do it in WIC, but I'm not trained to do it. We have hygienists that are trained, and they are forbidden from working, functioning in WIC right now.
Well, Mr. Chair, if I can just make some clarification for a moment, what this bill does is it does not amplify the things that they can do or the training that an LAP must receive. It just says where they can do it. So I guess I come back to my question. What this dental hygienist saw before versus what they will see after passage of this, how will this change the fact that these folks had this particular advanced care?
We can't do anything for the children that did not benefit from intervention for the last 2.5 years. We can't put that back in the box. However, children that are
age 0 to 3 now can have their decay prevented with appropriate interventions that are used all over this country.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, but I do not see where the bill says that it changes the delivery, other than just where the services is delivered, within the supervision of a dentist, who under the supervision of a dental hygienist. I guess they have the same skills before or after. It's just whether or not they ever come to a dentist office.
No, it's about whether an LAP hygienist can reach the children, and in this case also the adults that we're speaking of, not in a dental office. That I believe that was the intent of the legislation originally, to allow an access point for people that don't make it into the private dental office. And I can assure you, the people in highest need don't make it into private dental offices.
Yeah, I can do that. Okay.
Yes, Representative. Thank you very much, Representative Butler. Representative Greenlake.
This bill takes away any location restriction,
mm-hmm.
and they can now work in their own private practice, I suppose, or something else. Is the intention of your testimony to do that, or is the intention of your testimony to expand where LAP hygienists can work into all the poverty areas that might be relevant?
Well, the intention of my testimony is to assure that LAP hygienists, which are available and ready to work in this state, can work wherever they're needed. That's my intention. Wherever they're needed.
Okay, Mr. Chair. So that if this bill took even the one you have now away from poverty places and perhaps made her more accessible to higher income people who wanted her services, that wouldn't trouble you?
Well, I'm not concerned about that. And that's really not for me to be concerned about, because what I'm focusing on is access for people who have very limited funds and for organizations like ours that have very limited funds.
So if I may follow this. So you would be satisfied with an amendment to this bill that made it possible for LAP hygienists to function anywhere poor people without access to dental care, could get their services? I mean, that would satisfy your intent today?
Well, the problem is, how do you define poor people?
Well, but let's say we could define it.
But if we use Head Start as an example, if that meant that adults that are we're working with in Head Start,
sure,
were included, when I look at the need for Head Start, which is the primary reason I'm here, and then I look at the need for Lane County, I think that's certainly a vast improvement, and I absolutely want the WIC exclusion addressed, and would really like to have the ability to have our LAP hygienists work with the adults in our Head Start programs.
I just want to push on this a bit, so I understand what your testimony is about. We'll have lots of other testimonies.
Yeah,
lots of other people. If your testimony is that you would be satisfied on the basis of your testimony with a bill that allowed these hygienists to serve poor people in neighborhood health clinics, WIC program, wherever they find them, that would satisfy the intention
of
your testimony.
And what I'd want to be certain of is that community health centers were included.
I understand all that, but let's say we can get a definition that says,
mm-hmm.
folks, community health centers, WIC, Head Start, everywhere you find them, they could serve. That would serve the purpose of your testimony.
That would be a vast improvement, absolutely. Let me tell you what I worry about. I worry about an inadvertent omission of a site like WIC that somebody just didn't think of.
Fine, but other than that.
And so I would hope that you could allow, if you're going to continue with an arbitrary list, and it is, I mean, that's what you're talking about, right? An arbitrary list.
Mr. Chair, no, I'm not talking about an arbitrary list. I'm asking you a very specific question. If we could craft a bill that would allow LAP hygienists to serve poor people, and trust us, we can figure out how to do that.
Okay.
We can screw it up, and then we'll amend it next year. But if we could craft that bill, would that satisfy the purpose of your testimony, or is your testimony beyond that?
Well, where my testimony is beyond that is that I didn't understand in this legislation why Board of Dentistry was completely unable to correct this problem.
Okay.
And
let's give the Board of
and so
the ability to correct the problem. Would that still? The issue is whether we're trying to get limited access hygienists into places where poor people need to be served,
mm-hmm.
or whether we're simply trying to open up the scope of practice to anyone.
I have no concerns about people making money in the dental realm, and I want people to understand that. And I have told the ODA that and the ODHA that. I am in support of this not because of anyone's interest other than that of primarily children I see with absolutely abhorrent conditions in their mouths.
Okay.
So whatever gets that, that's great.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
It sounds to me like this is a primary prevention move. And adjusting something, we've received lots of testimony, mostly via email, both sides in my office. I can't speak for everyone here. But it sounds like what you're saying is you're trying to reach this narrow window of approach and any way you can. And in the birth to three period, that falls in right in the center of it. And if the parents in some of these programs don't take their kids to a dentist or whatever, and you're in a WIC program and you have this availability but you can't deliver it because of this law or the limitation in the law, that's kind of what I'm hearing here. And so instead of coming back every session and saying, oh, whoops, we forgot this spot and now there's this new place and we've got to have it on the list, maybe, I mean, I'm just thinking out loud here, is it better to find a place where it's not appropriate to do it and put that in the list? Or, I mean, are there any inappropriate
conditions? I actually would be interested in that dialogue, because what sort of confuses me is why, if it's okay for them to work on certain groups of people, why say they can't on other groups of people? And I honestly don't understand the logic of that. As a nurse, I'm not restricted in any way, shape, or form on who I work on. I mean, nobody's ever said, well, you can work on Representative Tomai and not Representative Boone. And yet, this legislation inadvertently does say that. And so it's very strange when you read it to understand what's behind that.
Follow up. Just a clarification, too. How were these designations decided? Who adds to the list, or is it always done legislatively?
It's always been done legislatively. I only have 3 years' history of this, and they had just recently added the schools, nursery schools line, where it had originally focused on elderly. And I looked at that legislation right out of the gate because I wanted to use whatever I could use for the problems that we were seeing. And I read it and I just thought, well, this is bizarre. They can work in private schools, but they can't work in like community health centers. They can't work. It didn't make any sense when you look at it from a public health point of view that private schools were included. And so, I mean, I would think that if you're worried about, I'm assuming, the idea that a hygienist could charge for services, well, she can charge for services in a private school, you know. And why do private children in private schools don't need this access, and yet it's written in there. So it just is a little confusing to me. And it seems cleaner to just say they're either safe to work in our state, wherever they're needed, or they're not. And if they're safe to work on an elderly person that's incredibly debilitated in a nursing home and in an infant and a child in Head Start, but they're not safe to work on you, I don't understand the logic of that. It's just very strange to me as a citizen, I suppose, of my state. Why is it that way? And I'd be very interested to hear the explanation of why it's that way.
Thank you very much. Representative Butler.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just, I think that the other exchange has largely helped me understand where Ms. Haynes is coming from. But I just want to make clear that what you're basically telling me, or telling the committee at this point, Ms. Haynes, is that this dental LAP dental hygienist that came to work to assist in these unique situations that you're faced with, that came from a private practice office, this particular hygienist would continue to volunteer time in addition to staying with their full-time job? Is that what they're...
Well, that hygienist currently is employed through the Federally Qualified Health Centers now, and we are in year two of a five-year Healthy Tomorrows grant specifically awarded to take advantage of using an LIP hygienist in public health settings. And, I mean, that's funded through the American Academy of Pediatrics. It's a HICFA grant. And it probably has the promise of continuation funds beyond. They're very interested in utilizing this model, and we are very limited in where she can function.
I don't want to belabor the point. I'm just trying to figure out is if we expand the scope, or not the scope, but if we expand the
location.
Opportunity for application, are we saying that more people will volunteer and will get more water to grow?
I have LAP hygienists in my county that would love to work in WIC and can't.
Okay. So,
and they would volunteer to do that, I know.
Excellent. That's okay. What I need to know. Thank you.
And in Head Start, but with adults.
Thank you. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Did I understand you to say that the private school children do not need this kind of care?
Well, not to compare to public school children. I mean, I haven't been and screened private school children, but what I see consistently is there is a link to low-income status and the kind of extreme decay I'm talking about. Now, I'm making a leap that, and there's no doubt I'm making a leap, and I'm not saying to exclude it from private school children, but I would have to say, working in Head Start, I think that seeing children in WIC, to have that excluded when children in Marist, in my county, can be seen, when their families have plenty of money to pay for private dentistry, that doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. Teeth are teeth.
Yeah, teeth are teeth.
They resist decay if they have fluoride, and if we can get fluoride to more children.
I'm chair of Oregon Head Start Association Oral Health Coalition. We've come out strongly in support of water fluoridation in the state. And you know what? I've been in support of it for, 15 years in Lane County?
And we'll be talking more about that.
and hey, I'm all for that, but I'm not...
I'm in this block. Could I follow up?
Thank you.
My real question is following the line of, I think, what Representative Greenlick is asking, and that is, we have coverage for nursery schools, daycare programs, other situations where possibly low-income children may find themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned WIC. What are the other programs that you are aware of that might need this expansion?
Well, there's actually a need for charitable groups that work with people of very limited income to be able to, in essence, set up a site for within their, or in a church or something, where they reach low-income people. I think particularly in our county, Central Latino Americano, which serves a huge Latino population, could benefit greatly from being able to use LAP hygienists in a similar way to WIC and reach children that would only come to those settings.
Family health centers?
Well, it's not family health centers as much as it gives an opportunity for groups that work with low-income individuals to set up access points. And in Head Start, you know, I think about the fact that even if we fix WIC, we're still going to exclude our LAP hygienists from being able to work on parents. We have parent meetings, and typically the problem we see is a family hygiene problem, frankly. I mean, we know that the parents in our program who have no dental coverage whatsoever have huge problems with dental hygiene and do not mentor to their children.
Well, at this point, the state does not have the money to cover children.
No, and I'm not talking about covering. I'm saying that one thing is I have LAP hygienists that would gladly volunteer in that capacity so we could bring them to a parent meeting where they could reach people.
When you mention Head Start, aren't you including daycare and nursery programs? That is essentially a daycare program.
Yeah, but it's excluded from working with the adults. So an LAP hygienist under that legislation can work in Head Start, cannot work with adults.
It doesn't say, it says enrolled students. I'm telling you, we asked. We were told they absolutely couldn't work on adults.
I guess what I'm asking is a question that Representative Greenlink did. If we were to include WIC, doesn't that really meet your need?
No. It meets a partial need. It addresses the most extreme problem, so I'm certainly not going to say no to that.
But you're saying you really can't describe to me other organizations or other groups that are in need other than WIC programs.
Central Latino American.
One group.
Okay. Churches. Homeless. Well, I don't know if homeless shelters are in the.
We're going to move
setting.
On. We're going to move on, and we're going to allow some other people to share their perspectives with us as well. So, Val, thanks very much for being here this morning.
One question, Mr. Just a quick one, and I have to throw this in. So, is there any availability that you know of right now that you're aware of people offering help to people who aren't in a special program for poor people, low-income people? The people just don't make enough money, and dental care is one thing that they just have crossed off their list to pay for.
Is there...
So somebody who doesn't qualify for a lot of the low-income programs but doesn't make enough money to pay for it.
Mm-hmm. Are there any of those groups?
Or is there any kind of... that you know of that... your LAPs are serving at this point, like a free clinic for, you know, one day a year or whatever.
Yeah, well, in Lane County, we have Whitebird Dental Clinic, and it is currently on waiting list, and people get up at 6 in the morning and stand in line for the until there's no more room, and then they get turned away. I get more phone calls from adults in my program now in need of dental services than for the children in our program.
Okay, thank you. Representative Boone and Val, thanks very much for coming up from Eugene this morning. Thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to move on to the next panel. We'll ask Scott Ekblad and Ed Patterson to come up from the Oregon. Well, Scott's from the Oregon Office of Rural Health, and Ed Patterson's with the Oregon Rural Health Association.
And as Ms. Hayes is leaving and they're coming up, Mr. Chair, if I might comment to help her understand, we deal with both politics and policy, and we try and create the best mix of those.
I know you understand.
Well, thank you. Good morning. Welcome.
All right. Good morning, Chair Dalto, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Scott Ekblad. I'm the Deputy Director of the OHSU Center for Rural Health, which includes the State Office of Rural Health.
Excuse me.
I'm here today to offer our support of House Bill 2426. It is a bill that would allow expansion of oral health care services, specifically prevention, to members of our state, residents of our state that aren't currently able to take advantage of the services of an LAP dental hygienist at the present time. I want to point out that the federal government, through the Health Resources and Services Administration's Health Professions Bureau, designates counties throughout the country as dental care shortage areas or health professional shortage areas. And in the state of Oregon, 23 of our 36 counties have at least part of that county designated as a dental health professional shortage area. And so we do, in fact, have a need for greater access to oral health care here in the state of Oregon. The consequence of this bill would be to expand those services by removing the restrictions on the settings where an LAP dental hygienist can perform preventive services, cleaning and preventive services. And I wanted to relate that, for example, in our rural communities, oftentimes a procedure or the services of a particular medical specialist are only available in that community through a visiting physician, and that sometimes it's only possible to get a mammogram, for example, once a month when that technology is available in the community. And this is something, if this bill were to pass, then a similar model could be used to provide oral health care services in communities that don't already have access to those services. An LAP dental hygienist could, in fact, come to a rural community, And if the church is able to, the local church is able to set up and meet the needs, then they could see all members of the community that came to see them that day, rather than only being able to see the children in the Head Start program or in the local school program or what have you. They'd be able to see everyone who needs the care. I am here also to lend the support for this bill of the Rural Health Coordinating Council, which is the advisory body that advises the State Office of Rural Health. And I've attached to my written testimony the statute that authorizes that committee. So with that, I'll keep it brief, and thank you very much for the opportunity to testify. I'd be happy to entertain any questions.
Any questions, Mr. Eckblatt? Debbie?
I think you answered my question to Val before about other people having access other than in a specific program that they have to qualify for. Thank you. And it's once a year? Is that these clinics?
The clinics are a theoretical concept right now because they aren't able to provide those services in those settings now. It would just open up the possibility, and hopefully it would happen more than once a year.
Thank you. Representative Greenlick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll ask you the same question I asked Ms. Hayes. If we can craft an amendment that would allow limited access hygienists to serve in clinics and dental underserved areas and a variety of other specific kinds of things like that, would that serve the purpose of your testimony?
Vice Chair Tomei, Representative Greenlick, the answer to your question is yes, that would serve your purposes quite well.
Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I am Ed Patterson. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Rural Health Association. And as you can see on the bill, we are a co-requester of this bill and very supportive. The Dental Hygienists in Oregon, the state association, has been a charter member of the Oregon Rural Health Association for as long as we've existed, which is about 12 years. And as Scott has already mentioned, our mission statement is to assist and increase the access to all kinds of health care in the rural areas. We represent about 50 rural health clinics in the rural parts of the state, about 20 rural hospitals, and about 500 individual citizens from rural Oregon. And we are very much in support of the bill, and I think we'll address the issues that we've already discussed quite thoroughly. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Ed? Seeing none, thank you very much, gentlemen.
All right. Thank you, Representative Tomei. We will bring up the next panel, Gary Allen, who is a dentist, and Stephen, is it Duffrey? Duffrey? Okay. Who is that an orthodontist, DDS? Dentist. Surgeon. Yeah. Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning.
Could you state your name for the record? That'd be great.
Gary Allen.
All right. Proceed.
Like me to proceed.
Yeah,
yes. Please. Thank you. Thank you, Chair Adalto and committee members. As has already been stated, my name is Gary Allen, and I am a dentist licensed to practice in Oregon, Washington, and Virginia, and I am currently employed by Willamette Dental as Director of Clinical Support for Quality Improvement and Training. I'm testifying here today on behalf of Willamette Dental and myself in support of House Bill 2426. House Bill 2426 will remove the arbitrary barriers that currently keep some of our state's most vulnerable and needy citizens from receiving basic preventive dental services. The supply of dentists in the nation and in Oregon is declining relative to population growth, and this is being felt in both rural and urban areas and by all age groups. Most acutely affected are those who do not have access to traditional dental office settings because of finances, age, infirmity, transportation, job conflicts, lack of insurance, and several other reasons. But preventive dental services do not need to be provided in a dentist's office. With advances in technology, miniaturization and portability of equipment, and improved materials and techniques, dentistry can be effectively, efficiently, and safely delivered in almost any setting. It does not make sense to limit the sites where LAP hygienists can provide dental hygiene services when, according to the U.S. Surgeon General, we have a silent epidemic of dental disease. Problems with access to dental care are not confined to the current short list of sites where LAP hygienists are authorized to practice under the law. Dental disease and access problems exist everywhere. Similarly, it makes no sense to continue to petition the legislation, the legislators, as we're doing here today, asking you to define the specific procedures that LAP hygienists can or cannot perform. Those decisions most appropriately lie with the Board of Dentistry, which represents a cross-section of experienced dental professionals in Oregon. Members of the Board of Dentistry are appointed by the governor and are granted authority to define the scope of practice for dentists, dental assistants, and non-LAP dental hygienists. It seems reasonable to assume they are qualified to do the same for LAP dental hygienists. Willamette Dental currently utilizes LAP hygienists to provide preventive dental services in Head Start, Early Head Start, and school-based programs, and in senior-assisted living facilities. We continue to receive requests to expand our programs to other facilities. It is a delivery model that is in great demand and will be even more important in the future if Oregon Health Plan dental benefits are further reduced for adults and as our population continues to age. Studies have shown that children who may be eligible for Medicaid benefits do not show up in dental offices if the parents don't go. And institutionalized senior citizens simply cannot get there. We need to take dental care to them. You may hear objections to this measure that it will present a threat to the public's health and safety. It's a common refrain, yet I have seen no evidence to support statements that unsupervised practice of dental hygiene is correlated with adverse oral health outcomes. That has not been the experience in other states, including Washington, where dental hygienists have been allowed by law to practice unsupervised in selected settings, to include nursing homes, for more than 20 years. No threat to the public safety has emerged, even though dental hygienists have worked with some of the most medically fragile and compromised patients. In Oregon, considerable time and resources have been invested in project prevention to educate nurses, physicians, and other healthcare providers how to assess and prevent early childhood caries. Similar programs have been developed in Washington, North Carolina, and several other states where dental disease rates are increasing and access to traditional dental care is declining. At the last meeting of the American Public Health Association in Washington, D.C., physicians and nurses were advising their colleagues on strategies to prevent oral disease, including techniques for topical fluoride application. I think it's commendable that our colleagues in the healing professions recognize the growing problem with access to dental services and are helping fill the void. But I wonder, is this the best use of their time and expertise? And where is my own profession? Dental hygienists are more qualified than physicians and nurses to provide dental services to populations at risk for oral disease, and they are willing. We just need to cut loose the legal and regulatory bonds that restrict them from doing what they do best and from doing what is desperately needed. The risk is negligible, and the potential benefit is huge. I strongly urge you to support House Bill 2426. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Allen. Comments or questions from the panel? Representative Greenlee.
Yes, sir. Thank you. I'd like to carry the same line of questions I've been pushing. You remember I first got interested in this bill when I met with folks at Willamette Dental who told me of the great need to expand LAP hygienists into other kind of programs for the poor that you and others serve. Would you oppose an amendment that restricted LAP hygienists, rural health clinics, other clinics, other programs, and perhaps even gave the Board of Dental Examiners some authority to determine which programs ought to be on the list and not on the list? Would that be something you would oppose as an amendment to this?
We strongly support returning authority to define the scope of practice to the Board of Dentistry. I think they're best qualified to do that.
Scope of practice isn't the issue, if I make sense. The issue is where that scope of practice can be applied. The scope of practice has already been defined.
But defining the procedures, it's rather than to come back to the legislature every 2 years, I believe part of the bill is to allow the Board of Dentistry to define what LAP hygienists can and cannot do in addition or as they currently do for all other health oral health providers. That is part of the legislation. The other part is the restricted sites that LAP hygienists can practice. I think that from the standpoint of my company or our company that I'm also representing here, we feel that an arbitrary list, because as Val suggested, how do you define where the need is? It exists in both urban and rural areas. You can set up oral health screening centers in a variety of settings. You can take portable equipment just about anywhere. And as Val suggested, and as you've heard in previous testimony, the patients flock because there's a great need for these services, and they're not able to get into traditional settings.
If I may make one follow-up. So you're suggesting that this bill amends also 679.010 that defines the scope of practice for?
There is a limitation in the legislature, as I currently understand it, that says that the scope of practice cannot be expanded by the Board of Dentistry for LAP dental hygienists. That is a restriction that is limited to that specific subsection of oral health care providers. It's my understanding, and I'm certainly not an expert on legislation and how it's written, but it's my understanding that the ability of the Board of Dentistry to look at the profession of dental hygiene and what LAP hygienists are educated and trained to do and to determine what they can do without having to come back to the legislature every 2 years.
Well, we'll check that with counsel. My reading of the bill doesn't change 010 in terms of scope of practice, but essentially eliminates the places that the scope of practice can be applied. I may need to reread.
And if I'm mistaken, I apologize. Like I said, I'm not an expert in writing legislation.
We'll check that with counsel.
President Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It appears that our problem is really we have a number of children who have a lot of caries, dental decay, and we can't access all of them. We can't treat them all. This appears to me to be a fairly temporary solution. The long-range solution is in fluoridating water and getting kids so they don't have decay in the first place. So it would appear to be temporary. You have 100,000 patients, do I understand that correctly?
As a company?
Yes.
I could not answer that specifically.
I think that's what it says here. Say you have 50,000. Do you have access to enough hygienists? Can you get the hygienists that you need to serve?
The population that we currently have, yes.
You do. You can find that. It's my understanding around the state there is a shortage of hygienists, and we need more to serve the public. The more we put out into situations like this takes away from the overall manpower situation we have. And there are only, I believe, 60 or so limited access hygienists in the whole state. So the real problem, I think, we need to look beyond this and look at fluoridation and the ability to cut down the problem in the future.
With all due respect, Representative Anderson, I would disagree with you. I believe that part of the problem is that we are doing too much dentistry on patients who don't need it and not enough dentistry on patients who do need it. It's been our experience working in these programs with LAP hygienists that they serve as a triage point to be able to determine which patients, which children, which adults can be managed out of the traditional dental office setting to free up our resources to treat those that are most in need.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Well, you should have seen the magazine I saw in Seattle last week, and it was a Seattle magazine, and you flip through, and half the magazine's pages are for cosmetic dentistry and making your smile better and all this kind of stuff. And it's really hard to imagine that some people seem to have no problem getting access to good dental care. So thank you, Dr. Allen. Dr. Duffin.
Chair Dalto, members of the committee, I'm happy to be here this morning to provide my support for House Bill 2426. I am a member of the Oregon Dental Association and a general dentist practicing in Salem, Oregon. I also serve as the dental director for Capital Dental Care, a dental care organization that serves 100,000 Oregon Health Plan members throughout the state. Access to dental care, especially for low-income citizens, is an increasing problem. Nationwide, the number of dentists who retire each year is greater than the number of dentists who graduate. The opportunity to expand the practice settings for licensed dental hygienists represents an opportunity to deliver safe and effective preventive services to underserved population groups, and in particular children. I would ask the legislature to act favorably toward this proposal to improve access to oral health care services in Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Duffin. Questions or comments from the panel? Seeing none, thanks to both of you for being here today. Next, we'll bring up a panel from the Oregon Dental Hygienists Association with Sue Sanzi Shadle and Kelly Swanson Cakes and Laura Kelly. And while they're getting ready, I just wanted to take a moment to welcome the Oregon Dental Hygienists Association and our members here today. Glad you could be here on your lobby day. So hope you're feeling welcome, and we invite you to pop in on the House floor or the Senate session. See what that's like. So welcome. And welcome to you.
Thank you very much, Representative Dalto and committee. My name is Sue Sanzi Shadle. I'm a public health dental hygienist working for 30 years in public health. Several weeks ago, I was here testifying in favor of House Bill 2025, the statewide fluoridation bill. From a public health perspective, and we've heard the discussion here this morning, prevention is the basic building block of dental public health, and fluoridation is the basic building block of prevention. The difficulty is only there are 81% of Oregonians who don't have access to fluoridated water, and so I am here today to support House Bill 2426, which has the ability to increase access to other preventive strategies for Oregonians, especially those who, due to infirmity, income, or location, do not have equal access to dental services. I believe we've discussed the issue of locations pretty thoroughly, so I'm going to skip that piece in my testimony. But there is another section of this bill I would like to address. It is Section 1, Number 4. It is the issue we just discussed about returning to the Board of Dentistry the authority to determine scope of practice for dental hygienists. The Oregon Board of Dentistry is the state agency which is charged with protection of the public. The current Dental Hygiene Practice Act prohibits the board from modifying the scope of practice of an LAP dental hygienist, although they have always performed this function for dentists, for hygienists, and for dental assistants. The current method of changing the scope of practice is to do what we are doing today. We're needing to create a bill. We're needing to find sponsors. We're needed basically to go through the legislative process. And although I believe strongly in the legislative process, it is a difficult process for changing the scope of practice when that process is already set up through the Board of Dentistry. And so I do support removing the clause which indicates that only the legislature can change the scope of practice and move that back to the Oregon Board of Dentistry. A second difficulty with the same section, Section 1, Number 4, relates to the changes to the scope of practice of dental hygienists, which are passed by the board. It's my understanding that those changes are not allowed by the LAP hygienists due to the wording of Section 4. The case in point is the board recently passed prescriptive privileges for dental hygienists as well as diagnosis of dental hygiene services. And although the LAP hygienists have a minimum of 5,000 practice hours and also have extra classes to be eligible for their permit, because of the wording of the ORS, which restricts the board from being able to change the scope of practice, a dental hygienist will now be able to prescribe fluoride for the children we speak of today, but an LAP hygienist would not. I encourage you to pass House Bill 2426. Passage of this bill will increase access to preventive dental hygiene services by eliminating the laundry list, giving authority for scope of practice changes back to the Board of Dentistry, who is the agency which has charge of to maintain safety of the public. Passage of this bill can only help to improve oral health and therefore the total health of Oregonians.
Thank you, Sue. Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sue, I just want to make sure that I'm understanding this correctly. So when you refer on your 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, paragraph to Section 1, number 4, you were referring to the part that says the Oregon Board of Dentistry may not expand the scope of unsupervised practice of a limited access dental hygienist by rule. And
that's correct.
That you point out that now there is a board. The Oregon Board of Dentistry is the state agency that is charged with protecting the public. And now this board does, what this board has to do is supervise and develop the scope of practice, I'm assuming, for, I thought I'd
they currently do that for hygienists, assistants, and dentists.
And for dentists. For all the other people, the other professionals in the dental profession. Is that correct? Am I reading that correctly? And so now what you're asking is rather than the legislature legislate that scope of practice, you are suggesting, or the bill suggests, that that function be returned to the Board of Dentistry, which also does that for dentists, for dental hygienists and dental assistants.
That's correct.
I understand that. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Tomei. Additional questions? Okay. So, who's next? Kelly?
Sure.
Okay.
My name is Kelly Swanson-Jakes, and I am a registered dental hygienist in the state of Oregon. I also hold a limited access permit. And this is my first time testifying, and much of my testimony is similar to that with what you've heard today, but I do have a voice, and with your permission, I would like to read my testimony also. Chair Dalto and members of the committee, I'm testifying today as a practicing registered dental hygienist and as a limited access permit holder. From here on, referred to as an LAP. I hold a Bachelor of Science degree in dental hygiene from the Oregon Health Sciences University. I currently work in private practice, and I volunteer regularly with the Northwest Medical Team's dental van. I serve on the advisory board for the Boys and Girls Club Dental Clinic, and I'm an active Rotarian in the Salem community. I am also a nationally published author on the issues of dental hygiene, and I am greatly concerned about the unmet oral health needs of Oregon's underserved. I urge you to support House Bill 2426. It is important for two reasons, and first, we've heard this many times today, but House Bill 2426 will remove the laundry list of places an LAP hygienist can work to meet the needs of the underserved. And striking this list from statute removes barriers to care. Doing this would allow an LAP hygienist to bring dental hygiene services to those in need regardless of where they live or what program they happen to belong to. Eliminating these restrictions would have no negative public health or safety issues, as an LAP hygienist has the same education and the same commitment to care wherever they are practicing. Furthermore, the LAP hygienist must have over 5,000 hours of clinical care experience prior to certification and is held to a higher level of continuing education requirements than a regular registered dental hygienist. Again, it makes no sense that under current statute, an LAP hygienist can serve children at a Head Start program but cannot serve children in the WIC program. Same services, perhaps some of the same children, but prohibited by current statute. It makes no sense that under current statute, an LAP hygienist can treat an adult patient in a residential care facility or a nursing home but cannot treat the patient who is homebound and unable to access care. The questions must be asked, why don't we want to remove these unnecessary barriers for those who need care? Why don't we want to utilize the LAP hygiene workforce to its fullest in meeting the needs of the underserved? What is the difference between providing dental hygiene services to the elderly in a nursing home or the elderly in their own home? And why does a child who happens to be in Head Start have access to care by an LAP hygienist, but the needy child who lives in a low-income housing project has no access? Removing the laundry list of places an LAP hygienist can practice better utilizes the healthcare workforce here in Oregon and better serves the needs of the public. Secondly, House Bill 2426 restores authority to the Oregon Board of Dentistry to govern the practice of the LAP hygienist by rule, such as Sue was just speaking of. When the LAP was adopted in 1997, the statute placed restrictions on the Oregon Board of Dentistry's role in determining which functions and procedures are within the scope of practice for an LAP. These restrictions prohibit the Oregon Board of Dentistry from carrying out its function to regulate dental professionals. The Oregon Board of Dentistry is mandated to protect the public and to act in their best interest. The Oregon Board of Dentistry governs all other dental practitioners, including registered dental hygienists, dental assistants, and dentists, with great care and great success. Why, then, can they not govern the LAP hygienist? The Oregon Board of Dentistry is in the best position to determine what procedures are within the scope of practice for all dental health professionals. Thank you.
Thanks, Kelly. Questions? Okay. And how about Lori?
I don't know if I can step up to that one, Kelly. most of what my testimony is about is just the same as what everybody else is talking, except I've been practicing as a limited access hygienist for the last 2 years, and I practice in a small clinic at Robeson Jewish Health Center over in Raleigh Hills, and I also am at Head Start in Clackamas County.
Lori, could you state your name for the record?
I'm sorry, I'm Lori Kelly.
Thank you.
I'm here for the practical part of it. I deliver triage regularly. I just got done on February 4th having a clinic out in Clackamas County for approximately 50 needy children. We did $13,743 worth of services in 5 hours. Oh, so proud. I triage a lot with the dentist. I do have the problems I have is I can't prescribe the fluoride. I can't, when I go in and do the screenings, I can't look at the older sibling. When mom came into the clinic to bring the kids in, she had an abscess tooth and I couldn't look at it, and I wasn't able to help her. The other things that happen are is when I'm at Robeson, I get patients from across the street from the assisted living facility where they're elderly mother has been dismissed from their practice because she has aphasia or clenching difficulties and that type of thing. And all of a sudden, I'm the expert. And so it puts me in a really awkward spot. I have a lot of nursing staff that educate me on a regular basis, so I really feel like I do have an expertise beyond what regular hygienists have. And the other part of this is I do a lot of volunteer, but I also am a mom, and I have 2 boys that need to go to college. So I do have to make some money. We were able to get a grant from the Oregon Community Foundation and another one from the Oregon Dental Foundation to support my practice. And pretty much I'm just here to answer any kind of questions you might have about the practical end of it.
Thank you. I had 2 questions, actually, that came up. You were talking about your not being able to prescribe fluoride, and also sort of the brick wall that you run up against when you have an abscess tooth situation. Do you feel that you're qualified to prescribe fluoride?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I know it better than my doctor that I worked for 13 years. I used to write the prescription out, and he would sign it. That's literally what goes on in the office. And I'd have to go through the age ranges and all that type of thing, and he would ask me whether we should use acidulated fluorides or neutral fluorides, or whether a fluoride varnish coming back every so many weeks would work better, or what my recommendation would be.
And about the abscess tooth situation, what is it that maybe you can do in that kind of, how would you treat it?
Triage. But if mom, sometimes we have patients that complain, and if they feel like they have access to pain, they just say something hurts. One young girl came in. I actually scheduled her in for the clinic. She's an older sibling, but I couldn't look in her mouth. because she's not an enrollee of Head Start, but she's an older sibling. She hadn't been to the dentist for 7 years, the family said. When she came in, she had stain. That's a really bad use of resources. We bust her in. So I don't know how much it costs to bust her in. I don't have all those numbers. But some of the kids, to fill the slots that I needed to fill to make sure all the dentists had enough work, I had to guess. But they did come to parent topic night when we spoke, and I had the hygiene students come out. But I couldn't look in their mouth to make sure. I had to just ask a lot of questions that would give me clues. So there were, I did good guessing though. There were only about 5 or 6 kids that really didn't need much treatment, so we put sealants on. The dentists were there to do that. So, and I'm happy to work with all these groups. And some of the groups have wanted to put me, to figure out some kind of contractual situation so I can get paid.
Okay.
Excuse me. May I say something, Representative Dalto? Concerning the fluoride scripts, the Oregon Board of Dentistry just passed that 2 weeks ago for all registered dental hygienists. They have already given us the authority that we can prescribe fluorides. They believe that we can through our education. However, because of the reading of the statute, the LAP hygienist, who has more education than a normal hygienist, cannot do that because of the statute. So that is what we are trying to eliminate and giving the authority back to the Board of Dentistry.
Okay. Representative Tomei.
Thank you. That's exactly what I was going to ask about. So you're saying the hygienist, dental hygienist, can prescribe fluoride, but that LAP cannot. And so because of the law as it's written now, and your point is that the board should be able to make that decision rather than coming back to the legislature to make that decision.
That's correct.
Thank you very much.
Okay, additional questions? No. Thanks very much. Okay. All right, we'll have Paul Cosgrove and Mary Lou Henrich with the Oregon Health Policy Commission come forward, please.
Good morning, Chair Dalto and members of the committee. My name is Mary Lou Henrich, and I'm here this morning as a member of the Health Status Work Group of the Oregon Health Policy Commission. I appreciate the opportunity to testify on behalf of HB 2426, an important bill that will remove current restrictions on where dental hygienists with an LAP can see patients and also restore the authority of the Board of Dentistry to determine the functions and procedures that may be performed by these dental hygienists. The Oregon Health Policy Commission was established by the 2001 Oregon Legislature to serve in an advisory capacity to the governor and legislature on matters related to improving the health and health care of Oregonians. The commission established 4 work groups to tackle different facets of this broad and complex issue. They are the work groups on access, cost, quality of the Oregon's health care delivery system, and the health status work group. The first 3 work groups examined and made recommendations focused on health care, while the 4th, that I was a member of, focused on broader issue of how to improve the health status of all Oregonians. The health status work group was co-chaired by commission members, former Governor Barbara Roberts, and I didn't put Jim Lazier's name here in the testimony, but Jim Lazier, recently retired CEO of St. Charles Medical Center in Bend, and I did attach a list of the work group members to the testimony. The group's work over the past year was aimed at the overarching goal to improve the health status of Oregonians by fostering supportive environments that are conducive to healthy lifestyles through effective state policy, education, preventive services, incentives, and collaboration. As we reviewed and analyzed available health outcome data from Oregon and other states, we focused on the major conditions that deprive Oregonians of years of productive quality life. The results of this analysis convinced us that our health care system does not and cannot adequately address prevention policy and activities that improve the quality of life, reduce the burden of chronic illness, and reduce the costs of acute and chronic disease management. So improving the health status of Oregonians will take concerted, coordinated efforts by many sectors of society, and this is a long-term effort. The work group prioritized its recommendations for initial action in 3 areas. First, continued measures and resources to reduce tobacco use. Second, improved policy and prevention activities aimed at reducing obesity, especially in children, through improved school nutrition environments and required daily physical activity and education. And third, and this is why I'm here today, to improve oral health through fluoridation of Oregon's public water systems and increase access to preventive oral health services through expansion of sites where limited access permit dental hygienists could practice. All of the work group's recommendations were targeted to improve the most pressing health problems that exist in this state and keep our residents from being as healthy as possible. We know that more than one-third of Oregon's deaths are attributable to just three unhealthy behaviors: tobacco use, poor eating habits, and lack of physical activity. Although oral disease is not a major cause of death, it is the number one chronic disease in children, especially Oregon's low-income and vulnerable children who live in areas without fluoridated water systems and lack resources to access early and routine preventive dental services. Removing the restrictions on locations where a limited access permit dental hygienist can practice these preventive oral health services is an important and cost-effective way to improve the needed access to vital oral health services to Oregonians. Thank you for allowing me this time to testify, and I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Any questions? Yes. Representative Greenlee.
I just want to clear up a little confusion in two sets of words.
Okay.
The formal recommendation is expand the number, is the expansion of sites. Your
yes.
last statement was remove limitations on sites. Those aren't exactly the same thing, is that right?
Well, I'm just going to look here, Representative Greenlee, at the recommended next steps, and I will...
I'm looking at bullet three of on page two of your testimony.
Oh, in my own...
Yeah, I'd like to use your own words.
Wording, okay.
I may.
Okay.
That says the formal recommendation of your status group
yes.
is through expansion of sites.
Yes.
Your paragraph down below says removing the restrictions on locations. That goes significantly beyond expanding the sites, does it not?
You are correct.
So you would be satisfied, and the health status subcommittee would be satisfied if we could craft a way to expand the sites to deal with all poor people and other people with limited access.
Yes, the actual wording of the health status work group was support expanding the number of sites dental hygienists can practice to increase access to services necessary to meet the oral health needs of medically underserved Oregonians.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, Paul Cosgrove, I'm the representative of the Oregon Dental Hygienist Association. I'm not going to present additional testimony except to point out that I was asked to distribute to you, and I think committee staff has given you, a copy of a letter from the Oregon Primary Care Association in support of the bill, Laura Sisler. And it reflects in that the needs that also exist in urban areas of Oregon as well. You've heard the rural perspective. This reflects that some of those same needs exist in urban areas. I would be happy to answer any questions about anything in the bill, but I don't want to repeat what's already been told to you.
Okay. Well, thanks very much for being here today, and I think that we've got some work to do on this bill, but before we figure out the extent of the work that we have to do, we will ask the panel from the Oregon Dental Association to come forward, please. Dr. Barry Taylor with the Oregon Academy of General Dentistry and Jane Myers with the Oregon Dental Association. And those are the last two speakers on this bill, and then we will be moving on to House Bill 2058. So hopefully we can get there in about 10 minutes.
Good morning. I'm Dr. Barry Taylor. I'm a general practicing dentist in Beaverton, Oregon, private practice. I employ a hygienist. Happily, an active part of our team, a very, very critical part of our team, I might add. And I'd also like to say with all sincerity that, you know, I think it's great that the hygienists are here today for their legislative day. I'm also a member of the Oregon Academy of General Dentistry, a professional group that represents general dentists and an active member of the Oregon Dental Association that represents over 74% of general of all dentists in the state of Oregon. And the last point I'd like to make a note of is that I'm also a very active volunteer with Northwest Medical Teams. I'm on the Dental Advisory Board for Northwest Medical Teams, and I volunteer for Northwest Medical Teams a minimum of once a month during the school year. I work with a low-income school that's in our neighborhood, treating patients there for free. The end result of House Bill 2426 is that it authorizes dental hygienists with limited access permits to practice at any location without the necessary supervision of a dentist. Although this bill was designed with intent to increase access for vulnerable populations, I'm opposing the passage of House Bill 2426 because it would cause greater negative consequences than it does relief. Dental hygienists and their training to assist with preventive services are a fundamental and critical part of the dental team and comprehensive dental care. This bill would increase dental hygiene shortages within the team and tend to drive up the compensation for hygienists, and increase fees for services. Financial burdens will also befall insured patients, as most insurance plans entail restrictions on the frequency of certain delivered services, such as cleanings or radiographs. For instance, if the hygienist provides these preventive services to a patient who is referred to and later visits a dentist, the services received in the dentist's office may not be covered. Although the patient may have radiographs taken by the hygienist, most dentists want to diagnose from their own radiographs instead of copies from another practitioner. It should also be noted that in the state of Colorado, which has had independent dental hygiene for approximately 10 years, there's been no significant decrease in the cost of treatment provided to patients, and it has had very, very little impact on the access to care issue. It should be noted that in Oregon, for those counties which have an oral health access problem, this bill does not address those barriers to access to problems. The general practitioner is uniquely qualified to lead the dental team. Dentists have received education and training beyond that afforded the dental hygienist. At minimum, dentists spend 3 years in college and an additional 4 years in dental school, which, while in some cases hygienists only have had to complete 2 years of dental hygiene school. Dentists are therefore uniquely qualified to provide diagnosis and formulate treatment plans. For example, if a patient were to come in with gross decay or an abscess, the mere application of fluoride varnish is not going to take care of the problem. There would still be treatment by a dentist. The level of safety provided to patients is higher when the patient is being treated under the supervision of a general practitioner. Allowing dentists to expand their scope of practice will actually decrease access to care for these vulnerable populations. If unsupervised care is available in all settings, then the access to more needy settings becomes diluted. Patients deserve to be taken care of and not exposed to unnecessary risk. I speak on behalf of my profession in opposition to this bill and also for the best interests of my patients. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Taylor. Questions?
I have a question.
Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Dr. Taylor, for testifying. Dr. Taylor, it seems to me what we're hearing is from patients who don't have access to dental care. So how do you address that?
How do I address the problem with...
The concerns that we're hearing today from the dental hygienists is that they are seeing people who have no access to a dentist, who would not have access to you. So how can we help those folks?
Well, I think that's our... It's what kind of care are you talking about in the population? And I think that's my concern. Is, you know, I fully support they call it a laundry list, but this list that seems to be specifying, you know, those people that are having the most difficult problems with access to care. And I want to keep that pool of hygienists, you know, there working for that population. So, you know,
there are populations in other settings that they say they don't have, they cannot, because of the scope of practice, they cannot treat those patients. So those people whom they see, perhaps, because they're an older sibling of someone in WIC or whatever, but they are not allowed to treat, that person would not have access to you either. So what they're saying, how can we help those people?
Well, that's a difficult question. I mean, a lot of it comes down to funding. I think that's why I was trying to make the point that the same barriers, if we have a population over here that's not getting access to a dentist, mm-hmm. there's a reason a number of reasons why they're not seeing a dentist. Those same barriers are going to be there for the hygienist also. So even if you allow the hygienist to see this population over here, why would they? Because they're going to have the same access to, they're going to have the same barriers that the dentists have. So you have county like Kearney County.
Thank you.
I mean, for example,
they are there. The client is there. The potential patient is there physically.
Right.
They could see them, but by law, they cannot look at their teeth. They cannot help them. But they wouldn't have access to you as a dentist.
They wouldn't have access to me, and I think that right. I'm not sure that what benefit that would be to have. You know, like it goes back to the child with an abscess or the gross decay. I mean, what it comes down to is that's a dental disease that needs to be treated in an operatory setting, and this bill doesn't address that. Does that answer your question? I'm not sure if...
Somewhat of, you know...
No, can I follow up on your question? Yeah, so one of the hygienists described a situation where she was seeing one child that was eligible to be seen under that particular setting. I don't know if it was a health, a Head Start setting or whatever it was, but then there was another sibling that hygienist could have seen to just take a look at and say, hey, you know what? You need to get to a dentist, or you know what, you know, maybe you don't need to get to a dentist. And for me, I mean, maybe that kid is not going to go to a dentist otherwise. I think that's what you're getting at. And they may not see a dentist, and then so they end up in an emergency room a year later because they didn't get to a dentist and they got to a situation where there was an infection. Or, you know, we're spending money and we're spending resources, and the kid suffered for that time. So, I mean, would you agree or would you disagree that at that particular moment in that health, that Head Start setting or something like that, that the hygienist could say, well, let me, you know, take a look at you if they wanted to and say, well, you know, you probably need to get to a dentist right away.
Mr. Chair, if I may, sure. I think maybe I can answer that question a little bit better because I made some notes during the previous testimony. In the case of Head Start, right now, the adults may be qualified for the Oregon Health Plan, in which case they would have access to dental care, dentist, dental hygienist, et cetera.
I'm looking at all these heads back. That's not true.
The Oregon Health Plan is funded by the state of Oregon and includes dental care for low-income some adults. So they would have some access to care. Also, last session, the legislature changed the bill to allow the dental hygienist, the dental, and not just the limited access permit, dental hygienists, but all dental hygienists, to do screening so they could look. The question that comes up then at that point is access to what? At that point, the dental hygienist, the dental assistants, even the mom looking in the child's mouth who's got an abscessed tooth, triage is a word, but what you need is treatment by a dental professional, someone who can actually relieve the abscess, drain it, prescribe the needed antibiotics, fill the tooth, drill and fill the tooth. I mean, it's dental surgery is what they're doing. And that is a funding issue. I don't know that all the adults in Head Start who come in would be covered for dental services, but they sure. Who are the people who run Head Start talking to besides children? Don't they talk to the parents of or the caretakers of the children who are enrolled in Head Start? There are numbers of things that have been done in this bill to increase sites, opened it up pretty much to any kind of school. Assisted living facilities is a big, many of them in the state where limited access permit hygienists may apply all of their services. So I think that some of the misconceptions that come through about who has access to services and who doesn't we need to give the committee some more information so you understand what the state has already provided in this bill.
Okay, hang on one second. But I have a couple of problems with what you're saying. First of all, there are only 25,000 slots on Oregon Health Plan standard right now. So, you know, even if the parents could be eligible for the health plan, you know, 25,000 out of the total eligible population of 600,000 uninsured Oregonians, for example, you got the parent in there with the kid. The parent goes in to see a lot of time. I mean, I don't have to tell you this, in low-income settings, in the lower socioeconomic settings, the kids are the ones that are driving the health care. You get the kid in to see the physician or the dentist or the medical professional, and it's like, oh, well, you know, I have this problem too, and I'm here now, and you kind of work from there. But the individual might not make the decision to go seek treatment unless they have that opportunity to even ask a question to sort of open them up to the possibility of care. And so unless you have a vehicle, and you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but if you have a vehicle where, you know, you have a clinic or something like that for the low-income kids and the parents are coming in, they're coming in, maybe they wouldn't have normally sought access because they would have felt like there was some kind of barrier for themselves, but they have that opportunity for that child, and so that kind of moves them into the mindset of access.
And Mr. Chair, you're correct about that. There are limited slots in the standard care program. The traditionally eligible folks still have dental care, a comprehensive package, at least currently they do. So some of those would be in there. And the siblings, which are raised, I would assume siblings are mostly enrolled in some kind of school program, so limited access permit hygienists may treat them now.
Taylor.
No, I understand your question now. I think the point, this bill still doesn't address if that adult has dental disease that needs to be addressed by a dentist. This bill doesn't address that at all. You can do all the triage you want, but the fact remains, and that's why we think that it's so important that the dental hygienist remains connected under the supervision of the dentist, because it's that, what's happening here is where this bill addresses one issue, but then what I'm hearing a lot is, you know, abscesses, gross decay, this laundry list of things that can only be treated by a dentist because it's treated, you know, with high-speed instruments in an operatory setting. This is minor surgery. And so these same people, that's why that supervision, that dental team is so critical and so important, is because it's the dentist that's going to be providing that care. I mean, does that make sense?
Yes.
What I'm saying?
Yes,
so.
It does, Dr. Taylor, but they're not proposing to provide those services just to say, hey, look, you got a serious problem here. You're suffering with this problem. You need to go to a dentist
right
away, and it reinforces that decision. You know, maybe somebody's on the fence or something. I mean, well.
No, I agree with you. I think we're on the same page.
I mean, my nephew has four black teeth. He's 4 years old, and my brother seems to think that they're baby teeth and they're going to fall out, and that's preposterous. But can I convince him to go to a dentist? No. You know, to take the kid to the dentist. I mean, that's the kind of thing. You get him into a hygienist. The hygienist is working on the kid in a setting like that. And he said, look, this is an emergency. You must go to the dentist. And it's reinforcing. It's another layer of reinforcement.
100% agree with that. And they can do that now. I mean, I don't see any reason why they can't.
Okay. Excuse me. Thank you. We have a couple. Representative Tomei, did you have a question?
I need clarification from a statement in your testimony, and that is on the second page near the bottom.
Jane hasn't done that. I'm going
to
ask.
Allowing hygienists to expand their scope of practice will actually decrease access for vulnerable populations. If unsupervised care is available in all settings, then the access to more needy settings becomes diluted. And I was going to say the same thing. I don't think I've been hearing that people want to actually have the authority to treat these more advanced cases. I think what they're asking for is expansion of authority to practice as hygienist in settings that people are not normally going to be going to a dentist, and that some have been left out of the list, that's a limited list. And when they see them in these settings, I think that's what Chair Dalton was trying to say. But if you could explain that statement, that would help me.
I'm not sure if I fully understand you. I think that the point I was making is that we have already a population that they can serve, and I support that. And I also would support, I think Val mentioned the WIC program. You know, I support, you know, access to that program. I think there's a concern that there's a shortage. You've heard from Willamette Dental, they talk about the shortage of dentists, and there's a shortage of hygienists. You know, within the past 5 years, the Oregon Health Science University closed their hygiene program. So we have a shortage of dental hygienists. And I think there's a concern that we have a population. We already have this laundry list here. So you ask yourself, is that population being fully served? If they're not being fully served, then we're going to, so you have this narrow band here, then we're expanding it even more, and I think there's a concern that we're diluting, you know, a population that's not being served by hygienists, and it's going to be diluted even further more. Is that your question? I mean, do you understand?
How by, you know, if allowing the LAPs to perform their service in the WIC program, for example, how that's how that is decreasing access.
Well, I support the WIC program. I support that.
Okay. All right. In the interest of time, we're going to have to move on. I'm going to ask Jane to give her presentation, and then we'll move on. For the folks in the audience that have a burning desire to continue the debate here, can I ask you to get your information to us in writing if you want to respond to some of the things that you heard? If you can get it to us, you don't have to do it now, but you can get it to staff, you can get it to me, and I'll submit it to the members of the panel, and your input on this discussion will be heard. So we sort of keep these opportunities for folks to offer public testimony open that way. So welcome, Matt. Okay, Jane, thanks.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Jane Myers, representing the Oregon Dental Association, and we really recognize the many contributions made by the dental hygienists to advance dentistry and help people who need services under this bill and in all ways. I'm going to keep this really, really short. Our association is quite willing to collaborate on amendments to the sites for the limited access permit work. I think the understanding that was created by the ODA and the ODHA originally got together and drafted language and asked the legislature back in 1997, I believe it was, 1997, to create this program. It was created with that list of sites to be served because it was couched as an access issue. We're trying to provide more access, more preventive care, which is what the specialty of dental hygiene is, to provide preventive care to people you will find in those settings, which are residential care facilities. And then later on, the legislature added the educational and correction pieces to it. We're very supportive of looking at sites. I mean, I think the association has demonstrated a willingness to do that. The part that was put in there about the Board of Dentistry and scope, those were considered by the people who put that bill together in the first place, the draft of it, that there are some special considerations for some procedures that really have some safety issues inherent in them that most of the dentists who are solo practitioners who ODA represents are not comfortable allowing the Board of Dentistry to design the scope there, because the board does get subject to a lot of pressure, and it's there's some serious considerations there. We'd be happy to have witnesses bring you some more information about safety concerns that are on the procedures in that list.
Mr. Chair, can I?
President Greenlake.
Jane, I do appreciate your willingness to deal with the expanded site thing. It's something I'm very much interested in, but I really am at a loss to understand your last comment. I mean, it seems to me we as a legislature and the state have defined the Board of Dental Examiners, not this process, not the legislature, but the Board of Dental Examiners, to determine scope of practice and a variety of things. And it seems to me completely reasonable to let them decide scope of practice across the full range of dental practitioners. And it sounds like you don't have confidence in our decision to allow the Board of Dental Examiners to make those decisions. Is that what you're suggesting?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, it's not a lack of confidence in the Board of Dentistry's ability. I'd say the legislature created a limited access permit design that's working rather well. Most of the states, there's only one state that allows what House Bill 2426 would do entirely. Most of them have site restrictions like this, and from what I read, don't have the Board of Dentistry involved in writing more sites into it or more procedures into it. The Board of Dentistry, quite honestly, and I understand it's a question that was raised here about what the board's latest rulemaking did, but the Board of Dentistry has quite a lot of authority to write to interpret scope of practice for the dental hygienist. The scope is determined by the statute, both for the dental hygienist and for the limited access permit folks. So I want to assure you, we have confidence, and the board already has tremendous amount of scope writing authority. Our folks were just uncomfortable with, and that's why that was put in there. There were some procedures that we didn't feel we wanted to just say without a lot of thinking about what kind of safety issues are involved for patients that
would take them out of the statute. That's why they're there.
Right. Well, I mean, it seems to me if we don't have confidence in the Board of Dental Examiner's ability, the process, the rulemaking authority to deal with these kinds of issues, and I think this experiment has been an experiment that has worked in the settings, we don't hear any horrible things to it, then we ought to have a bill before us to change what the Board, I guess the Board of Dentistry, right, not the Board of Dental Examiner, but the Board of Dentistry can do. I mean, it seems to me we've tried this experiment. We do need to deal with the site model, but it seems to me taking away that authority, the way that I read 205 is that the board could change the scope of practice for hygienists, and because of the restrictions in it, might not be able to change it for limited practice hygienists. I mean, that seems very odd to me.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to respond to that. The board can change the practice for the dental hygienists. The limitations that are written in the statute are things that they can't change for limited access permit hygienists. I think the question that's unclear is when they change the definition for dental hygienists, how that affects a limited access permit. We're quite willing to work on that for a greater understanding for the committee, but where the association is at the moment, and this is respectfully, we're quite willing to collaborate. We have confidence in the Board of Dentistry. Not saying we always agree with them, but we have confidence in their ability to write rules. We're quite always ready to collaborate and work with the committee and its members on, you know, what's good for the public order, public safety, and the professions involved.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Greenlake. Representative Tomei.
Thank you. I'm just following up. Representative Greenlake asked a lot of the questions that I was interested in asking also. I have a couple questions. The Board of Dentistry is comprised of, you don't need to give me the name, but the professions of the people in the Board of Dentistry and their, how many there are.
I don't have any problem.
There are 9 members of the Board of Dentistry, 6 dentists, 1 is a specialist physician, and there are 2 dental hygienists and 1 public member.
Okay, and thank you, may I follow up? Thank you. So what is the relationship between the Oregon Dental Association and the Board of Dentistry?
The Dental Association represents mostly solo practitioner, owner-operator dentists, private dentists in the state of Oregon. The Board of Dentistry regulates, licenses, disciplines those dentists, plus dentists who work for public health city type operations.
Do they make recommendations, and who will be appointed to the Board of Dentistry?
The governor's office usually asks for recommendations from the hygiene and the dental associations, but does not have to follow them.
Okay. And what proportion of times would they follow up on the governor's or their recommendation? What proportion of time would the governor follow up?
Proportions of time.
We usually, is what I'm asking.
I think it's 50-50.
Okay. And I'm going back to Section 1679.010, limited access permit. What would be your greatest fear if that were changed?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm not sure of... Representative Tomei, I understand your question.
Okay.
679.010,
that's
are those
one,
definitions?
That's the limited access. So what access would you be fearful would happen if this weren't in statute?
I'm not sure I can express this as a fear. Let me try this. Limited access permit. Actually, I mean, we bandy those words around quite a bit when we talk about this particular permitting process. It originally was thought of limited access means to patients who do not have the regular kind of access to dental hygiene services.
Correct.
The thinking being that if we can get some of the dental hygienists, and they were big supporters of this. I mean, I think it was their idea originally, and then the ODA supported it. If we can get them to interact, to be at these site facilities where you will have patients who do have limited access, mm-hmm. not who have... Mm-hmm. the ability to find themselves dental care when they need it. You establish a link with, hopefully, with the dentist who can provide care, full care, tooth fillings, restorations, disease control. That's not within the scope of the hygienist. So, yes, we saw it as a link, as a kind of opportunity to act as a team to provide more services to people with limited access.
Okay.
I guess,
last question. I'm trying to understand. So what's the worst that could happen? Because there's a huge list, but the list could go on and on of people, especially poor people who don't have access to any kind of dental. So I think the point that we've been hearing today is that many of those places weren't thought of when this bill was written. And there will be more next week and next month and next year. So what is your greatest fear? What awful thing would happen if this were eliminated and we just accepted that there are places where their folks don't have access to dental care, and we're hoping that the LAP, am I looking at the right letters, that these people can help them get access to dental care?
Well, I suppose it comes right down to, I think for one thing, all of the sites on the list, it is very well thought out. I can't imagine there are a lot more. They mentioned charities and churches. The legislature fixed the charitable organization part of charitable organizations that operate dental treatment for the poor. Northwest Medical Teams is one of them. The legislature fixed the statute last year so that they can employ dental hygienists, period. They don't have to be limited access permit hygienists. They can be hygienists. And the understanding was, and the fix in there was, you don't have to be owned by a dentist if you're a charity or a church. You could do it for churches, too. I guess I don't know if they fall under charitables or not. But charitable organizations can operate to provide care for people who need care. And they can supervise as many dental hygienists as they want. But the understanding was there was going to be a dentist there who was going to be responsible for the care, for making sure that the patient on Saturday morning who has a toothache or whose child has a toothache has someone to call who's going to be responsible for that care, making sure the person has somebody to call instead of just saying, oh, go down to the emergency room and we'll see you down there. And that is a fear. And there's studies that show you if you don't have Medicaid services for adults, they end up at the hospital in the ER. So, yeah, that would be a fear that we would somehow decrease that. We're trying to get that program to work, this limited access program to work, and I don't think that there's a whole lot of facilities that haven't been thought of. The legislature's been very accommodating to add them.
Okay.
Thanks very much. Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jane, I appreciate the association's willingness to collaborate and work cooperatively to expand the limited access permit sites. But I'm interested in, on page 2 of the bill, on lines 1 and 2, which is a deletion of current subparagraph 4 under section 1, to remove the Board of Dentistry from limiting the scope. Something needs to happen here in order for the board to authorize fluoridation and that authority to the LAP dental hygienists. If we can work on this legislation to make certain that there's an expansion of site authority, how do we gain the authority to give the fluoridation authority to those folks that want to apply that particular talent?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Representative Butler, that's a good question. I don't have the answer to it at the moment. Be happy to try to find out how that could be done and whether it should be done. But we're here ready to cooperate to try to reach some satisfactory resolution on the issues the bill raises to the committee's satisfaction. I don't know the answer to the question about the fluoride prescriptions at the moment.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, I think that'll have to conclude. Jane, you have a last thought? Okay, thanks very much.
Mr. Chair, I just had one question or one comment to the chair, and that is, and to the committee staff. We've received, I'm sure my email system is not unique, to the number of emails pro and con to this particular issue. Just want to make certain that the chair is accumulating those that come to you and entering those into the public record. Are you prepared to do that?
We are doing that already.
Thank you very much.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair, maybe we can ask the ODA to call off the dogs while we're trying to work on an amendment for this.
Well, I don't know that dentists or dogs represent
but it's filling my email system.
Chair, mine have been coming from both directions.
Yeah. Well, let's ask both of them to call off the dogs while we try to work this problem out.
Detente, perhaps, is in order as we work through it. Okay, thanks very much to everybody who's been here on this bill. We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2426. We'll open a short hearing on House Bill 2058 and invite Representative Crummell and Felicia Holgate and Jim Gores and Karen McLean up. Can we get all four of you? Can you pull one of those chairs? And if we could ask the audience to keep it down a little, we're still in session, that would be helpful. Folks, thank you. Right, nobody cares.
Hey, you about got that sized up right, Mr. Chair?
Then get out.
There you go.
In the leather jackets.
Hello, good morning, welcome.
Good morning.
Representative Crummell, do you want to introduce the amendment, or do you want them to talk a little bit about what this bill is about first? How do you want to do that?
Mr. Chair, if they want to go ahead and talk a little bit about what the bill is about first, that would be great.
Okay. Are you okay on time?
Yeah, I'm okay.
Okay. I think they'll do it really quickly.
Okay.
Thank you.
And I'll be real quick, too, when you're done.
Okay. I'll go first, if that's all right. For the record, my name is Jim Gores. I'm an assistant budget analyst with the Department of Administrative Services Budget and Management Division. I work as a budget analyst for the 9 agencies that are going to be affected by this bill, and it's. I also want to state just for the record that I am not in any way a representative or associated with Shared Client Services Division of DAS, the Department of Administrative Services. I just, due to my unique situation and position, I've just worked as the coordinator on this. This issue that the bill addresses has been around for 8 to 10 years, and it's been driven by these 9 boards to find a solution to this. Currently, all the health-related licensing boards are given one agency number and one account within the public health account within Treasury. As it stands, all boards are assisted with their accounting and budgeting functions by the Department of Human Services. And this, the major proponent of the, or component of this bill revolves around the repeal of ORS 409.320 Section 2, which requires DHS to provide these services for these boards. Over the years, these boards have grown as the health and medical industries have grown. And as a result, also their accounting and budgeting functions also have grown. At the same time, the resources available to DHS have decreased. And in addition, DHS's, the Department of Human Services accounting system is set up to better accommodate the needs of a large organization as opposed to these smaller boards. In the past year and a half since I took on my position, we've looked at a variety of different situations in which we could maybe alleviate the problems that are being experienced by this group. In the end, it looks like moving these boards to shared client services within DAS and just for their accounting and budgeting functions would provide the most prudent solution to this. The sole purpose of shared client services within DAS, if you're not aware, is to provide these all the various small agencies around the state with accounting and budgeting functions. They essentially act as the accounting branch for these agencies.
Let me see if I get this then. So these accounts are in the Department of Human Services right now. They're being managed by the Department of Human Services, and you have several agencies that have grown pretty significantly as the healthcare demand has grown, and so they've outgrown their ability to efficiently manage their funds through the Department of Human Services, and there's a different agency, DAS, that has this shared client services division that might be able to better manage these accounts. Is that pretty much the sum total?
That pretty much is the sum total, yes.
Okay. Anything to add to that?
Not at all.
Okay. Ladies, do you have anything to add to that?
Well, good morning, committee chair and rest of the committee. I'm Karen McLean from the Board of Pharmacy. And during the this past year and a half with Jim Gore's assistance and the Department of Administrative Services approved the Board of Pharmacy, our statutes were more lenient than many of the other boards in this bill. And we were allowed to move to shared client services effective October 1st last year. We have already seen a lot of increased service, assistance with problem solving already in just a very short period of time. It is night and day different in what they can provide to us. And they are dedicated. That's all they do. The issue with DHS is they've done a very good job with what they have, but they're not able to provide us all the services that we need. That's it in a nutshell.
Okay.
Absolutely. And Felicia Holgate, I'm one of the new directors of the Occupational Therapy Licensing Board, and I have testimony as well as all the other committees. This, we spent an inordinate amount of time, and with 1.25 FTE, any financial work, budget work, is done by me, the director for our agency. And so whatever we can do to make this system easier will save us time to do substantive work that we should be doing. We're all in support of this bill.
Anybody have a concern about this bill that you would imagine? Nobody's?
DHS supported it as far as I know.
DHS for certain, but I wouldn't mind hurt talking to them also.
Representative Thomas Butler, CPA.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And looking at Jim's final parting comments here on his testimony, it appears to increase the accounting costs for five of the nine boards. It really doesn't solve any of the financial or budgeting issues necessarily, and there may be unforeseen difficulties in shifting these boards from DHS accounting to the shared client services system. I guess that doesn't give me a warm feeling that it says that this is going to be guaranteed to be a cure-all, but by the same token, if the boards and their respective members, those people that they represent in the various boards, whether it be the Board of Occupational Therapy Licensing or the Board of Morticians, Mortuary and Cemetery Board, as long as their constituencies can agree that there's going to be more cost, and a greater cost shift potentially down to the board participants and licensees, and recognize that there are some other issues that they may be faced with, as long as they agree to that, then I don't know that we can stop them, or I don't feel to be in a position where I'd want to stop them.
And this this bill has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means because of that issue. So, okay, thank you, Representative Butler. All right, well, thank you for presenting. And Representative Krummel, you have a separate issue, but this might be a vehicle to bring forward your issue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, State Representative Jerry Krummel, House District 26. And yes, my primary interest in this bill is because of the relating clause. It is relating to agency licensing boards. And what I would like to do is bring in an amendment when you're ready to take this to work session, Mr. Chair, that would repeal the sunset of Chapter 736, Oregon Laws 1999, which is the registration for athletic trainers. Registration for athletic trainers started in 1993 as kind of an informal listing of a nationally certified athletic trainer. It was formalized in 1999 with state recognition and registration, and has become the gold standard for athletic trainers and kids sports as first responder care in the state of Oregon. It was strengthened in 2001 and 2003 as far as enforcement was concerned. The enforcement aspects, there were some mix-ups with that. That was strengthened in those two sessions. And this bill continues to, the registration continues for athletic training, or continuing it is important as far as protection of our kids when participating in sports activities and especially in our schools, and what we're finding is that now when schools are hiring athletic trainers, they're hiring only the best people that are actually registered and certified and know what they're doing. And so with that, Mr. Chair, I will end, and if there's any questions, I'll be glad to answer. Thank you.
Well, Representative Crumwell, you're seeking an amendment right now.
Yes, I have asked Legislative Council. First of all, I asked them if this vehicle would work. They said it would, and I have asked that the amendment be drafted. I don't know when it will be ready, but okay. I'm sure that whenever you want to take this to work session, we'll help expedite the amendment being.
Okay. Well, we will make sure that the committee has that ahead of time, so that since it's a new issue, we can allow them to do the research they probably want to do before we do that. Okay. Thanks, Representative Crumwell.
Thank you.
Yes. Go ahead, John.
If I can just real quickly,
sure.
Since we're on amendments, I spoke to Sandy. I just want to get this on the record. We need to make an amendment to this bill, if we could, to repeal ORS 409.320 subsection 2. It just addresses the fact that DHS, Department of Human Services, will provide these services for these boards. Field so that they can move to shared client services. Thank you.
Okay, well, work with Sandy to seek your amendment. And out of curiosity, do you know what the fiscal impact is going to be of this?
Overall, I can just speak to the overall number. I can get you more information as far as the exact numbers for each board. But overall, it'll save approximately $39,000 in other funds.
It'll save?
It will save, yes.
Okay. What about Representative Butler's concern about 5 out of 9 boards increasing their accounting costs?
Very good question, sir. What that is the savings from the other 4 boards is so significant that it actually outweighs the increased expense for the other 5.
So are you passing that on to the other 5?
I actually do have the information I can give.
Like the media agreement for the NFL?
Well, and if my mic is heard also, one of the things that has also happened, it's not represented here and even in the fiscals, is that the Department of Human Services for the past 3 years has said they're going to raise our rates significantly. In fact, they were going to double them this past biennium, and then they decided not to. So they understand that probably what they're charging us is not enough to cover their costs. Well, and so some of our increases are reflected there also.
Can we do a little work on the fiscal end to see if we can rescind this Ways and Means thing so that Representative Crummell's bill amendment doesn't get delayed at all? And maybe you can do some work and get back to Sandy on that.
Would be happy to.
Great. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you, colleagues. We're going to close the work session or the public hearing on House Bill 2058, and we're going to adjourn this meeting. Thanks for sticking it out.